The men sat on the front porch of John Carlin's ranch house and listened to Matt and Sam relate the events of the day.
So Miles Singer is my full brother, the youngest of the three boys.
Three boys that we know of. And that old mountain man Ledoux is our uncle. Life sure takes some funny twists and turns as it moves us toward the grave.
That's almost poetry, John.
John ducked his head to hide his embarrassment.
Singer never wears a gun, so we can't call him out. I'm sure that's deliberate on his part. He's hired bodyguards that I'm equally sure will probably shoot either or both of us on sight if the right moment ever comes along. Our kids, including the girls, are on the dodge, living in the mountains with a pack of outlaws and ne'er-do-wells, all of them ready to put a bullet in us at any time. I have been in some sorry situations in my life, but none to compare with this. Getting drunk doesn't help. I know. I've tried it.
Well, let's see if my addition is right. There are still about 20 gun hands hanging around, right? Gunslingers that I brought in.
Or hired from me. We both have to share equally in that stupid move.
I count 19.
That's about as close to 20 as you can get, boy.
That's not counting the four that Singer imported. And the bunch that lined up in the mountains with your kids. Bull, you said you were going to get in touch with the territorial governor. What did he say?
He said, and I quote, "There hasn't been enough provocation for him to warrant sending in the state militia." In other words, he's hoping we'll all kill each other off. He doesn't like me or John, and has never made any bones about that.
Of course, we haven't given him much reason in the past to like us.
You're sure right there.
One of the hands came riding in, turned his horse into the corral, and walked over to the porch.
Boss, I seen sign that a whole bunch of riders have moved onto our range. They come in from the mountains.
Coming which way?
Hard to tell, Mr. Bull. A lot of them fell in behind a bunch of cattle moving toward water. But the way the cattle was moving was direct to here.
Bull and John rose as one.
They're going to try here first.
Laredo, tell the boys to get their guns loaded up and ready for a fight. We're going to be outnumbered.
We'll be ready, boss.
The cowboy took off at a trot for the bunkhouse.
It's a hell of a thing to say at this late date. But despite all my big talk, I don't know if I can let a hammer fall on my own flesh and blood.
Sir, you wouldn't be much of a man if it came easily to you.
The women were told to go into the house, but neither John nor Bull made the mistake of telling them to stay down low and out of trouble. These were frontier women, and they might have told their husbands, in a ladylike manner, of course, where to stick that suggestion. Jenny and Roz were upstairs, sitting by a window, each with a Winchester rifle. Connie was at the side of the house, also upstairs, with a long-barrel 10-gauge goose gun, loaded up with buckshot. At the range she would be shooting from the bedroom window, she could do terrible damage with the big goose gun, and she definitely knew how to use it.
Rider coming!
Damn fools! Don't they know that the advantage is ours because we hold the high and protected ground?
They're riding with hate guiding them, John.
What if the girls are with them?
I thought about that. I got a couple of punchers ready over there in the trees, with ropes.
I bet they'll be sorry when they drop a loop over one of those gals. Sorry, Bull. John.
No need for sorry when you're right. I hope they do jerk my girls out of the saddle. When I get through working on their fannies, I think they'll have a brand new outlook on life.
The boys?
I honestly don't know. Deep road apples, girl.
I busted my ass!
Not nearly as bad as I'm going to.
The first wave of the ill-conceived attack was broken, and the Knight Riders cleared out, at least for the time being. The daughters of John Carlin and Bull Sutton were brought kicking and biting and scratching up to the porch.
I think I'll go help with the wounded.
Me too.
Each father had a big, hard hand clamped down tight on the back of a young lady's neck. The men's wide leather belts were already removed and dangling from the other hand.
You bastard! You're not going to hit me with that!
Ow! Daddy! You miserable son of a... Ouch! Daddy! Ow! Daddy! Ouch!
in the house!
Move, girl!
About 5 minutes passed, during which time the butts of the young ladies were thoroughly blistered by angry fathers swinging wide leather belts. The sobbing girls were then handed over to their mothers. If Petunia and Scarlet expected a velvet hand to comfort them in their time of need, they were sorely, in more ways than one, disappointed.
We can wait you out! It might be a week before anybody from town come out to check on you.
He's right about that last bit, but wrong about everything else. Come the dawn, we can spot them and flush them out. I thinned the trees and cleared the rocks and filled in the gullies around this place years ago to prevent just such a thing from happening. Just keep your heads down. It's going to be a long night, boys.
The ladies, after seeing to it that Petunia and Scarlet were in no condition to run away, went to the kitchen, located in the center of the house and well protected, and helped the cook fix plenty of strong coffee and lots of sandwiches. The men in the bunkhouse had their own fixings for coffee and sandwiches and could safely relay them to those in the barn. The defenders of the ground settled in for a long wait through the night's darkness, all except for Matt and Sam.
We're going to do some headhunting. Don't worry. We were both schooled in this beginning way back when we were no more than babies.
I believe it.
Bull knew the fierceness of the Cheyenne warrior and suspected rightly that both Matt and Sam had been initiated into the Cheyenne Dog Soldier Society. The blood-bonded brothers took off their boots and spurs and slipped into moccasins. They left their rifles and took only pistols and knives. Within seconds, they were lost from view, moving as silent, stalking ghosts through the occasionally gunshot-punctured night. Matt used to kid Sam about the tomahawk he carried in his saddlebags, but Matt knew that the war axe, in the hands of someone who had been trained to use it, was a weapon, and Sam was well-schooled in this particular method of killing. Matt was no slouch at it either. A man that Sam had seen around town over the past week or so reared up a few yards from him. He slowly looked all around him, attempting to see through the murkiness. The head embedded in the man's skull, and he threw out his arms and fell to the ground without making a sound.
Anybody seen Petunia or my sister Scarlet?
Them down yonder put a rope around both of them. I seen them jerked out of the saddle.
Damn!
Wanda moved on her hands and knees directly toward Matt. Matt tensed and silently cursed. There was no time for a struggle of any sort. If the girl came up on him, he would have to pop her on the jaw and hope for the best. But he did not want to hit a woman, even Wanda or Willa. Well, not too hard, anyway.
Maybe they got away. I'm gonna circle around and check.
You be careful!
Yeah, yeah.
Wanda crawled right up nose to nose with Matt. He laid her out cold.
What was that?
What? I didn't hear nothing, Billy.
Matt got to his knees, and trying hard not to grunt, managed to get Wanda across his shoulders. The young woman was no lightweight. She certainly hadn't missed a meal since being born. And to make matters worse, she needed a bath really bad. Sam made sure his brother had a clear path to the top of the ridge by taking out the last sentry in that area, and then suddenly appearing at Matt's side in the night. Matt had been expecting him, and was only a tad startled.
You bringing in an early Christmas gift, brother? What do you have there, a calf?
Very funny. This heifer is not petite. We better not go back the same way we came up.
Agreed. The creek is our best shot. I'll work point. But for God's sakes, keep that one quiet. If she starts braying, we're dead.
You want her?
Thank you, no. I had a pet cougar one time. Once was enough.
Once off the ridge and close to the creek, the brothers had to stop and stuff a bandana into Wanda's mouth to keep her from squalling and bellowing. Then they had to stop again to truss her up tight with their belts to keep her from scratching and kicking.
I hope my pants don't fall down.
Wanda kicked out with both tied boots, and Sam narrowly missed getting his bell rung.
Girl, you are beginning to try my patience.
Soon they approached the rear of the bunkhouse.
Matt and Sam, coming in with Wanda.
Better you than me.
The brothers slipped through the darkness and made the front porch.
I got another one for you, Bull. Good luck.
I don't know whether to thank you or hit you.
Bull reached down and jerked the girl to her boots. He wrinkled his nose.
Whew, damn, girl, have you gone on strike against bathing?
Bull leaned into the darkened house. The lamp lights from the kitchen could not be seen on the outside.
We have a skunk on our hands, Mother. Fix up lots of hot water so as we can get the stink off her.
Wanda tried to kick her father, and that got her a pretty good pop on the jaw from a big, work-hardened palm. The blow brought tears to her eyes. Bull reached up and tore the gag from her.
You're gonna get popped every time you cuss me or yell out to your no-count brothers and friends. You understand that?
Wanda stood with her hands at her sides and her mouth closed. For a change.
Now get inside the house and take a bath. You can wear some of Petunia's clothes she left behind. You don't sass me or your mother. You don't cuss me or your mother. You don't do nothing except what we tell you to do. Your days of running high and wide are over, and you damn well better understand it. Do you?
Yes, Papa.
Bull opened the door, and Wanda walked in with him right behind her, followed by John Carlin. In the kitchen, she joined her sister and Petunia. Both of them were scrubbed clean and wearing dresses and very subdued.
What made you kids think you could get away with this wild scheme?
Our brothers.
The boys hate us that much?
Yes, Papa. You probably won't believe this, but at first none of us girls wanted anything to do with their plans. I won't pretend to excuse what we did by laying all the blame on them, but they had to work on us for a time before we agreed to go along with them. But only after they agreed that you and Mama wouldn't be hurt.
Neither Bull nor John believed all that she'd said, but neither of them wanted to give up entirely on their daughters. Still, they didn't trust them any further than they could see them. These girls were schemers and connivers, but maybe not as vicious as their brothers. Time alone would tell that. But neither man held out much hope.
Wanda, take your bath and get upstairs. Petunia and Scarlet, upstairs too. Don't try to run. We're all operating on a short fuse and trigger fingers are itchy this night.
The daughters filed silently upstairs.
You believe anything they said?
No, I don't trust any of them. But I'll give them one more chance. Even a mean dog deserves that.
And when they turn on us again?
I hope you wouldn't ask that, because I damn sure don't know the answer.
The gang left their dead where they lay and pulled out sometime during the night. The ranch hands dragged the bodies in and buried them in unmarked graves. No one knew any name to put on the markers. One rider with a busted jaw and no front teeth was trussed up and handed over to Tom Riley and his deputies. He refused to say who he was working for or where the gang was hiding out.
They'll have changed hideouts by this time, probably outside of this county.
I bet they're south of us, just across the line in Utah.
Can you prove it was your boys?
Not unless the girls swear statements. You can ask them.
Tom did, and the girls all said their brothers had planned the raid but did not come along. The girl said they just came along for the adventure of it. They didn't think anyone would be hurt, and surely no one would be killed. It was just a hoorah, that was all. Surely the marshal didn't think they would take part in doing harm to their parents.
Lying little no-goods.
You heard at least one of our kids out yonder, didn't you, boys?
You, but I didn't see him.
You boys, stay here with John, if you don't mind. I've got more hands than John. And a couple of them are as salty as any who ever sat in a saddle. Tom brought me word that I've got four more men in town. Cowboys, not gunfighters. But they know how to use guns. John's more shook up over this situation than I am. He's still undecided. But I know what I'm going to do.
Bull swung into the saddle and fell in behind his wife and their errant daughters, the girls sitting in the bed of a wagon on lots of hay. They all glared hate at the Blood Brothers.
I wonder what he's got in his head to do.
Finish it. I'll make a wager he's going to take the fight to them this time.
And he's telling us to stay out of it.
That's the message I got.
You boys don't have to stay here. But there is something you can do for me, if you will.
Name it.
Escort Petunia into town and put her on the afternoon stage. She says she doesn't want to rejoin her brothers and damned if she'll stay here with her mother and me. Says she wants to go to New York City and become an actress. Both her mother and me said that was just fine with us. I think this will be the last time her mother and me will ever see her. I view that with mixed emotions, but mostly with relief.
Sure, we'll escort her into town, John. But there's something else. Your boys and Bull's boys are going to brace me and Sam one of these days. Probably pretty damn quick. I just want you to know...
You do what you have to do, Matt, Sam. You're dealing with renegades now. Night riding outlaws. They came here last night to kill me, their mother, their brother, anyone else who happened to be here. So don't hesitate on my account. Bull thinks I haven't made up my mind, but he's very wrong. You boys ride easy now. And you're always welcome out here, no matter what happens.
The big rancher walked away.
I think they both got their heads together and planned something, but they don't want us in on it. They plan to stomp on their own snakes.
I'm glad we won't be a part of it.
I wonder if we'll be that lucky.
On the way to town, Petunia sat on a pillow in the buggy seat and stared straight ahead.
I suppose my father asked you gentlemen to personally see that I got on the stage.
Yes, he did. You have some objections to that?
Not one. Just don't touch me. My brothers will kill you both, you know. My only regret is that I won't be here to see you crawling in your own blood.
You're a really charming young lady.
Thank you. I wondered when you would realize that obvious fact.
For two whole days, the town of Crossville was quiet and free of trouble. The same bunch of hired guns drifted in and out, but they caused no ruckus of any kind. Miles Singer had closed his bank, and in its place had opened a land office. The four gunslingers he'd hired as bodyguards hung around and loafed, trailing and fronting him wherever he went. The town seemed peaceful enough, but all its residents could detect a slight air of tension. Sort of like when the fellow in the hotel room above yours drops one boot on the floor and never drops the other one. You keep waiting. Matt and Sam watched as Batty came fogging into town, waved at them, and then jumped out of the saddle and rushed into the marshal's office. He came out and waved again.
I need me a beer. Talk to you two in a minute.
Tom exited his office and walked up to them, buckling on his gun belt.
You boys hang around and help Parley if he needs it. John and Bull lost about 500 head of cattle last night, apiece.
Next thing you know, they'll be hiring regulators.
Not in this county. I'll shoot a damn back-shooting regulator as quick as I will a rustler. And I already told Bull and John that, long before you two come wandering into this god-awful mess. I'll see you boys later on. I imagine it'll be a couple of days before me and my posse get back.
Some of the most able-bodied men and best shots in town.
Matt looked up and down the street as young Parley joined them on the boardwalk. The smithy had closed up and gone with the posse, as had the man from the saddle and gun shop. The tough young man who ran the livery had gone. The barber, who was a seasoned veteran of the Indian Wars, had closed up and ridden out. The Mexican, who had fought Apaches and Comanches down south and who ran the cafe, had gone, leaving his wife and daughter to run the business. Ralph Masters joined the group.
Oh, there's an interesting look on your face, Mr. Bodine. Anything I can write about?
I hope not.
What's on your mind, Matt?
Same thing that's on yours.
With some of the best shots in town gone for several days, this would be a dandy time for the Sutton Carlin boys to hit us.
Exactly.
You think stealing those cattle was a trick?
I wouldn't be surprised. Now let's keep our eyes open and watch for gunslingers to start drifting into town. If a lot of them show up, that'd be a pretty good sign that something is up.
Parley, you better tell the men you know that'll stand to load up their guns and keep them handy. You take the other side, and Matt and I will work this side of the street.
There aren't that many left.
Yeah, we know.
Batty had stayed in town after hearing the news.
There's plenty of hands at the ranch to fight off any attacks should that happen. But I think you're right. I think right here is where it's gonna pop.
Doc Blaine walked up, and the men were surprised to see that he was wearing a gun belt, a second six-shooter shoved behind the belt. He smiled at their startled glances.
I only said I didn't like guns, boys. I didn't say there wasn't a need for them or that I couldn't use one.
There's Shorty and Cleet riding in, and a couple with them I ain't seen before.
That's the first time they come to town since they quit Mr. Bull. Or at least the first time I seen him in town.
Look at the south end of town. There come Pud, Proctor, and Dormer.
There's Goody stepping out of the livery. Two men right behind him.
Only a couple of real gun hands. Makes me wonder where the others are.
They're close by. We can all bet on that.
The bank. That's what they want. If they could clean out the bank, they'll have this town on the ropes, along with Bull and John, because it's their money that started it. Then they'd start rustling all of their cattle and wipe them out. The other top guns are probably about a mile on either side of town. When the shooting starts, they'll come in fast and hit the bank and the stores, cleaning them out of cash. If they could manage that, this town would die, or at best, be so crippled it might not ever recover.
If that's true, somebody planned this very carefully. But I can't believe it was any of the Carlin or Sutton kids. None of them are that smart.
The man who planned it is standing right over there in the doorway to the land office. Miles Singer.
Why don't we just plug the skunk now and be done with it?
It's a nice thought, but he's unarmed, as usual. He's a careful man. It would be out-and-out murder. Sorry, Batty.
But it was a good thought.
Interesting thing for you to say.
I do have my moments when frustration builds to the boiling point.
You sure do talk funny.
A young boy scurried out of the alleyway and up to the men. He had a .22 caliber single-shot rifle and carried two fat rabbits hooked onto his belt.
Deputy, I seen a whole bunch of really crummy-looking men over by the creek east of us. They told me if I said anything about them, they'd skin me alive. I told them to go to hell and took off running.
You did just fine, Billy. Now you go on home and take care of your mother. And don't leave the house now, you hear me? It's gonna get real dangerous out here in a minute.
Any of those bad ones come close to me and Ma, they gonna get plugged.
That sounds good, Billy. But don't take any chances. Now go on home. Hurry!
The boy took off at a run, his dog right beside him. Shorty stepped out onto the boardwalk in front of the Red Dog.
Hey, Cleet. Bet you a dollar I can hit that running mutt from here.
Your own!
Billy heard every word, stopped, and knelt down, rage on his face. He leveled his little .22. The little slug tore off part of the man's ear. Cleet dropped his six gun, blood pouring down the side of his face.
Shoot that goddamn kid, Shorty!
Shorty jerked iron and leveled his .45 at Billy, who was frantically trying to reload and protect his dog at the same time. Four six guns roared from across the street, and Shorty was slammed back by a barrage of .44 and .45 slugs. He fell through the newly installed front window of the saloon and did not move. Cleet clawed for his other gun.
I'll kill that goddamn punk kid!
Doc Blaine drilled Cleet from a good 85 paces away.
Anybody who would shoot an innocent dog is a sorry enough excuse for a human being. But anybody who would shoot a child is on a level with snake crap.
Singer stood in the doorway, stunned by the doctor's shooting of the man. His bodyguards all looked at one another as if they didn't know what to do next.
Get the hell home, Billy! Right now, damn it!
Billy got. Doc stepped back into a store stoop.
Get back! Take cover!
What the hell are they waiting for?
Here they come! My God, there must be 40 of them!
Harley had returned to the marshal's office for sawed-off shotguns and bags of shells. He passed them around.
This is not going to be pleasant.
Unknown to Matt and Sam and Deputy Harley Davis, a few of the ladies of the town had met secretly during the last few days and formed their own plans as to the protection of life and property. Armed with rifles, shotguns, and various types of pistols, including a few dragoons, the ladies took their positions inside the Crossville Cattle Exchange Bank, the general store, the dress shop, and a few other businesses. The outlaws who had foolishly decided to attack and loot and attempt to destroy this western town going to be in for the shock of their lives. And for some of them, it was going to be a very brief shock. The last thing they would know on this earth. Matt and Sam lined up a racing rider and fired as one. The outlaw threw up both hands and tumbled from the saddle. One boot twisted and hung in the stirrup, and the man was dragged to the point of being unrecognizable to the edge of town, across the bridge, and beyond. Singer was quick to realize that his plan was not going to work.
Get back in here! It's going sour! Move! Quickly!
Nyburn stepped into the land office, Donner right behind him.
It just started.
Nobody trees a western town. I told everybody it wouldn't work.
Stop bickering! Let's just keep our heads down. There's always tomorrow.
Bad enough for them boys out yonder.
Matt and Sam cautiously looked around for any of the known gun hands. But few of them had even shown up for this disaster, perhaps sensing that was what it would turn into. They might be paid gunmen, and in some cases cold-blooded killers, but that did not make them stupid. Just a little short in the morals department. A hired gun staggered out of an alley and collapsed face down in the street.
Do you know that fellow?
Never saw him before in my life.
Name's Barton. He's a drifter and a no-good. When he does work, he works for Ledoux.
It's beginning to get a bit clearer now.
Doc Blaine had holstered his pistols and was now carrying his black bag. The undertaker and his helper were wandering from body to body, the helper carrying a tape measure and jotting down measurements. Pud, Proctor, and Donner stood silently, looking at the carnage that lay still and bloody in the street. Only a few who had attempted to tree the town were still alive.
There's four back here in this alley. One is still breathing.
Wu Fong's got one in his cleaning place. He busted his head with an iron.
Two behind the bank.
One behind Miss Charlotte's.
Matt and Sam and Parley walked the street and the alleys, looking at the dead and wounded. They stopped in front of Singer's land office and looked in through the open door. The four bodyguards were sitting in the outer office, Singer sitting alone in his big office.
Didn't work out quite like you planned, did it, Singer?
Ralph Masters was busy taking pictures of the dead. Somebody had propped an outlaw up on a board with his rifle in his dead hands and was charging 2 bits to anyone who wanted to pose for a picture.
Somebody get that one the horse dragged. Then toss him in a wagon and bring him back here.
18 dead and 4 still breathing, Parley. I ain't never seen nothing like this.
I hope I never see anything like it again.
Lawyer Sprague walked up, carrying his rifle.
You will. The worst is yet to come. Isn't that right, Singer?
I don't know what you're talking about. This is a terrible, terrible thing that happened to this lovely town today. A tragedy, I say. I have never before witnessed such an overt act of wanton brutishness.
Blow it out your ass, you big windbag.
The lawyer walked on up the street.
Singer, you better leave town while you're still able. I think your time is growing rather short.
Singer glared at Sam and said nothing. The blood-bonded brothers walked on. They climbed the stairs to the hotel, which had not received a single bullet hole this time around. They entered the hotel dining room. The chef stuck his head out of the kitchen. He wore a Prussian-style helmet, complete with high plume. He frowned at the brothers and disappeared back into the safety of his kitchen.
The way things are going, the helmet is not such a bad idea.
Matt stared at Sam for a moment, working up a mental picture of him in a Prussian helmet.
Oh, I think I would appear quite dashing.
Oh, I do too, Sam. I do too.
The two men moved to a table. They stopped at the coffee urn and filled their cups.
Look out that window there. Someone is getting desperate.
A lone rider was walking his horse up the street. The man was dressed all in black, from his hat to his polished boots, and carried his rifle across his saddle horn. Even at this distance, Matt recognized the rider.
Gates.
Wilbur Gates. Nobody really knows where he's from, but he's a long-distance shooter. And I've never known him to miss.
I wonder who brought him in and who he's after.
Killing us would solve nothing. We're not the principal players in this little drama. But that isn't to say Gates wouldn't shoot us if we got in his way.
Sam, is there a fifth player in all this mess?
Why would you think that?
Outside, Gates swung down from his horse and walked into the Red Dog, carrying his deadly rifle. He was not a big man, but that rifle made him a giant.
Who slipped that note under our door?
I've thought about that. I've given it a lot of thought. I don't know. There isn't anyone else in town who stands to gain by all this.
There has to be. Nothing else figures. Think about it. Who in town, what businessman, is making money out of all of this? Who stands to profit by keeping all this stirred up? John and Bull can be discounted. The Sutton and Carlin kids don't have the sense to plan something this complex. Singer's devious, but as far as I'm concerned, he's just about played out his string. So there has to be someone else.
Not Ledoux?
No, Ledoux's a half-crazy, bitter old man.
I'm stumped.
So am I.
Matt looked up the street and suddenly smiled.
I know who the fifth party is.
So tell me.
You're so smart, you figure it out.
All right, I will. Over a steak, medium, with potatoes and a side order of scrambled eggs.
For lunch?
Why not?
I can see it now. When you're 50 years old, you'll have a new name. Big fat ass who makes the ground tremble.
A tired posse rode in the next day, Bull and John with them. The men needed only one look at the boarded-up windows and the bloodstains on the boardwalks to know that one hell of a battle had taken place. Over coffee, Matt and Sam explained.
And none of our people got hurt? That's incredible.
Not a scratch.
Did you see any of our kids taking part in the fight?
No, not a sign of them. But Wilbur Gates is in town.
Son of a goddamn bitch!
There's more. Ralph Masters is keeping all this stirred up.
What?
Has to be. He's making a small fortune selling this story and the accompanying pictures to the big city papers back east. He's got to be the one who slipped that note under our door. He's not in any conspiracy with Singer, and he...
Matt paused, a reflective look on his face.
What's the matter?
Think back, Sam. After the Carlin and Sutton kids staged that mock battle and tried to kill John, remember I told you that I saw Singer looking at me sort of funny?
Yeah. And you also said you thought somebody was with him in his offices. Who was it?
Ledoux.
You know, you may be right. I saw old Ledoux that day riding out of town with somebody. I don't remember who it was.
Which way were they heading?
Towards the creek where you and Mr. Sutton was going to meet.
Oh, I hate this. I helped Ralph get set up here.
Hell, so did I.
What? He told me that he felt you were entirely in the wrong and I was in the right.
He told me that I was in the right and you were in the wrong.
That lying little weasel. The damn little no-account played both ends against the middle, and we never caught on.
This is giving me a headache. But something doesn't figure. Look, what has Ralph Masters got to gain from all this? As soon as it's over, it'll be old news.
He and Ledoux just might be playing a very dangerous game. The situation here is fraught with deceit and backstabbing. We might not have to do anything except light the fuse and stand back and watch it blow up in everybody's face.
I'm thinking right along the same lines you are, boy. But let's just make damn sure that we're not too close when it does blow up.
What do you two have in mind?
Nothing firm yet. At least I don't. We might not have to do anything. It might ignite all by itself. I'm thinking it probably will. Let's just wait and be very cautious while we do so. And keep an eye on Ralph Masters and Miles Singer.
I'd like to go stomp Singer slap into the damn ground.
I'd like to go knock the living shit out of Masters, lying little skunk.
I'd like to jerk up Ledoux and shake the truth out of that old fart.
Patience, gentlemen. Patience.
I'd give some thought to grabbing up Ledoux. That old man would as soon kill you as look at you. He's not playing with a full deck.
You can bet your boots and saddle on that. And he ain't got no use for either of you men.
Looky there out the window. There goes Wilbur Gates riding out. That's one man who gives me the creeps.
I just wonder which of us Gates has come to kill.
Might not be either one of you. This web's so tangled it could be anybody or nobody.
What do you mean by that?
None of us has considered that the man just might be passing through.
Well, you can forget that. Gates just pulled up at the hotel, and he's getting his war bag. Looks like he's here for a spell.
Van picked up the large stack of wanted flyers.
Forget it, Van. Gates isn't there. There's no flyers out on him. I've been behind a badge for more years than I care to think about, and I ain't never seen a wanted poster on Wilbur Gates. He comes into an area, somebody dies, and he leaves without a black mark on him. Nobody's ever been able to prove anything against him.
What about the cattle that were rustled?
Oh, we found them, about 15 miles from home range. It was a trick to get the men out of town. Tracks went every which way. We decided to give it up and come on back in.
What do you want me and John to do, Tom?
Stay close to home. And if you just have to do any riding, don't do it without men with you.
Sam and me'll stick to Gates like glue. If he doesn't like it, he can damn well turn and make a play.
Our kids have to be running out of money. I know what those gun hands are paid a month. Me and Bull put a crimp in Singer when we pulled out of his bank. He's doing all he can to pay those high-priced bodyguards of his. I know damn well that Ralph Masters doesn't have that kind of money. Ledoux, now, is another story. That old coot has probably got wads stashed back. And he's got the patience of a cigar store engine. Damn it. I wish I knew what was really going on around here.
No, it has to come to a head for long. After this attack on the town failed, they all got to be getting desperate. And when people reach that point, they get careless. Everybody on all sides. But you and me, John, we just have to make sure that we don't get careless. Not with that back-shooting Gates in the area. We'll send some boys in with wagons and double stock up with supplies. Then we'll hole up at our ranches, agreed?
Yeah, but it goes against the grain. I don't like for other people to fight my battles. Why don't you take a vacation, Tom?
And it'll all be taken care of when I get back. Right, John?
You can damn well bet on that.
You know better than to even suggest that, John.
Well, it was worth a try. I'll be getting on.
Van, you ride with John. Nate, you ride with Bull. You boys take it easy and relax and lay low. Make plans for the big wedding coming up.
The ranchers allowed themselves a small smile.
There sure is that.
Wilbur Gates took Matt and Sam shadowing him for less than one day. On the afternoon of the day after he rode into town, he stopped his horse and turned in the road to face Matt and Sam, not 100 yards behind him.
Boudin! I don't like people following me. Get off my tail. Do it now.
Or you'll do what?
I'm no fast gun, Boudin.
No. You're just a back-shooting, cowardly son of a bitch.
Sam and Matt rode up to Gates. Gates tensed in the saddle, but kept his composure. He knew he was no match for Matt Bodine or Sam Two Wolves. Few men were.
You pay for those words, Bodine.
Ride out of here, Gates. Pack your kit and ride on. If you stay around here, you're going to be buried here.
Strong words, Two Wolves.
But true ones.
What's your interest in this? I'm curious about that. You both own ranches. It's rumored that you both have some money. You're not being paid by any faction that I know of. Why are you here?
We were passing through and took a liking to the place. That's an interesting rifle you have there. What kind is it?
Oh, just a plain old .44-40. Nothing unique about it.
Somehow I doubt that.
You've been warned, boys. Don't crowd me anymore.
Oh, we'll be around, Gates. Just look over your shoulder and you'll see us. I can promise you, we're not going to let you out of our sight.
You two are in no danger.
But our friends are.
The ranchers? They're in no danger either.
Why should we trust you?
Boys, there may be a lot of things you hate, but a liar ain't one of them.
Both Matt and Sam knew that to be true. Most paid killers operated under a strange code of conduct. Some would kill a woman, but not a child. Others looked with contempt upon those who would steal. Many would have nothing to do with a rapist. Still others would not tell a lie. Gates fell in the last category.
Who the hell are you after, Gates?
No one who's a friend of yours.
That doesn't tell us much.
That's all you need to know. Now back off, boys. I won't warn you again.
Gates lifted the reins and deliberately put his back to the brothers. They let him get several hundred yards away and then followed. They followed him all the rest of that afternoon and then back into town. If the man in black was angry, it didn't show in the way he sat his saddle. He stabled his horse and, carrying his rifle, walked the 2 short blocks to the hotel, Matt and Sam right behind him. Gates was at the front desk.
Send some bath water to my room. Oh, yeah. Send up some supper, too.
Gates turned to climb the stairs and spotted Matt and Sam. He turned and smiled at the Blood Brothers.
I hope you enjoyed your ride, boys. I certainly did. I'm sorry we won't be able to do it again, but I'm leaving in the morning. My work here is through.
Tom Riley came in.
Ralph Masters is dead, boys. Killed an hour ago. Shot at close range while he was walking from the privy back to his office. Blew his head off.
Well, we can't blame it on Gates. He wasn't out of our sight all day.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
When we talked to him this afternoon, he told us he wasn't here to harm any friend of ours. And you know how he is about lying.
He said just a minute ago that he'd be leaving in the morning. Said his work was finished.
What work?
My guess? To distract the law while someone else pulled the trigger.
Yeah, you're probably right. I didn't think about that. Well, I reckon Gates is free to ramble if that's what he's got in mind. I sure can't hold him on anything.
Tom opened the hotel door to leave. A bullet tore through Tom's shoulder and knocked the man to the floor. Matt and Sam dashed out the door.
Somebody get Doc Blade!
The shot came from the east side. You want the front or the back?
You circle around, Sam. I'll take the front. You be careful.
Just before he rounded the corner and stepped into the murk of early evening's twilight, Matt saw Doc Blaine and the deputies coming at a run.
Van! Somebody cover the bridge on the southeast side of the road. Sam and I will take the rest of it.
Got you, Matt.
They're heading your way, Matt. Two of them. Both of them have rifles.
We got them. They can't get away. One's down, the other's heading your way, Sam.
Two down.
Get some men over here. Carry Tom to Doc's clinic.
I never saw this one before.
Sam squatted down.
Sam!
He's hit, Matt. Sam's down.
Matt ran through the twilight and jumped down the embankment, sliding down to Sam's side.
He's gonna be all right, Matt. The bullet ricocheted off a rock and hit Sam in the side. He's got some busted ribs, but he ain't shot.
That's number three.
Oh, God, we all must have hit him. He's shot to pieces.
I'm afraid I'm going to be incapacitated for a time.
Shut up and hold still.
As gently as he could, Matt's fingers moved along his brother's side.
At least two ribs cracked, maybe three.
Ooh, feels like all of them.
Wait till we try to move you, then you'll really know it.
You're such a comfort to me. Go see if you recognize any of the dead.
In the twilight, the dead were dragged and carried to the porch of the hotel, and there, under the eyes of travelers, Matt looked at them. He didn't recognize any of them. Wilbur Gates squatted down beside a body.
Russ House. That one over there is named Pat something or other. I don't recall ever seeing this third one. Marshal Riley was wearing a black hat and a black shirt this evening. From a distance, we resembled slightly. This is interesting.
You mean they may have been gunning for you and shot Tom by mistake?
It's a possibility.
To shut your mouth as to who hired you to come here and do whatever the hell it is you did.
Your words, Bodine, not mine.
Gates stood up and walked back into the hotel. Matt left the porch and walked up the street, right behind the men who were carrying the stretcher with Sam.
Tom's all right. The slug punched right through the meaty part of his shoulder. Tom's a tough old bird. The gunman?
All dead. Wilbur Gates identified two of them. He says he didn't know the third one, and he also thinks the snipers may have been after him. Tom was wearing a black hat and black shirt, remember?
This thing is getting spooky, Matt.
Yeah, at least that.
The next morning, the hotel desk clerk came tearing up the street, waving his arms wildly.
Help! Somebody get the deputies! There's been another killing in my hotel!
Matt was having coffee with the deputies, and all of them stepped outside at the commotion.
Whoa, man, slow down and tell me what's wrong.
Wilbur Gates is dead! That's what's wrong. His throat is cut from ear to ear, and there's blood all over the place. The mattress is ruined, and so is the carpet. Now, I can't have any more of this, Van. It's bad for business.
It ain't good for people's health, either. Come on, let's take a look.
Matt looked down at the pale face of Wilbur Gates. His eyes were wide open in shocked death.
Razor, or a very sharp knife.
Just look at this room!
Gather up all his possibles, Parley. Tote them over to the office so as I can go through them.
I'll check his horse and saddle. His rifle's gone.
A search of Gates' possessions turned up nothing. Matt went over the saddle and saddlebags carefully. Nothing. Wilbur Gates would carry his dark secrets to the grave. Ralph Masters was buried that afternoon, and the three gunmen were planted without fanfare in the rapidly growing town's Boot Hill. After checking on Sam and Tom Riley, Matt got the key from Van and opened up the newspaper office. He sat until dusk at the desk, going over papers that yielded him nothing except a case of eye strain and a headache. He went to the Mexican cafe for supper. Raul Melendez was there, drinking tequila and looking grim. Matt almost backed out, then said to hell with it and went on in. Matt ordered a meal and a beer. The guitarist, who had been taking a break, climbed back onto his stool to play.
Hey, don't play that damn thing again. Your playing makes me want to puke.
Well, I like guitar. Let's hear something.
The guitarist looked at one gunfighter, then the other. He shook his head, picked up his guitar, and left the room.
He fears me more than you, gringo.
Oh, I doubt it. He probably doesn't want to see you humiliated, that's all.
I think I will kill you, Bodine. I will shoot you to bloody pieces.
The patrons exited quickly, including the owner, the cook, and the two waitresses.
You won't kill me.
Matt ate and drank with his left hand. His right hand remained close to the butt of his gun. Melendez was not only fast, he was tricky.
Oh, yes, I will. Then I will be the most famous gunfighter in all the West. But I will be gracious about it. I will allow you time to finish your meal.
Oh, that's big of you, Raul.
Melendez looked around, a frown on his face.
What's the matter, Raul? Can't you work without an audience?
I am going to enjoy killing you, Bodine.
Bodine sensed they were no longer alone. Another gun slick had moved in behind him.
I didn't know you were this yellow, Raul.
What do you mean?
You have to have a back shooter behind me?
Very good, Bodine. Come over here, Pud. But Bodine is mine.
Pud Mackin moved to stand beside the seated Mexican gun hand.
I'm gonna enjoy seeing you dead on the floor, Bodine. You're a meddling pain in the ass.
Matt smiled. Matt overturned the table with his left hand and drew with his right hand. Raul Melendez took a round in his left shoulder, knocking him backwards. Matt drew his left hand 44 and drilled Mackin in the belly, doubling the man over. Then Matt jumped to one side and dropped to the floor on his knees, just as Melendez raised his pistol. Both of them were behind overturned heavy tables. Bodine shot out the hanging lamps above the dining area and plunged the battleground into darkness.
Oh, God, I'm hit hard, Raul. Kill him for me. Kill him!
Matt quickly loaded up full and waited, not wanting to be the first to fire and give away his position in the darkness. He felt around him on the floor and picked up an unbroken coffee cup. He hurled it across the room.
I will not fall for that old trick, Bodine.
Matt fired in the direction of the voice and then shifted locations and reloaded as quietly as he could.
Oh, Christ! I gotta get to the doctor.
Pud Mackin staggered to his feet. Pud fell against a wall and slid down to the floor on his butt.
Damn you, hell, Bodine. Damn you.
Come on, Bodine. Come on.
Matt holstered his guns and picked up a chair. He threw it with all his might. Matt stood up as he saw the darkened shape of Melendez rise to his feet, the cane-bottomed chair all tangled up in one arm. Matt moved to the door and looked out.
Van! Parley!
We're here. Nate's over with the marshal. Who's down?
Pud Mackin and Raul Melendez. Get some light in here.
Lamps were found and lit, and Doc Blaine rushed in and knelt down beside the Mexican.
The man shot to pieces, but he's still alive.
Bodine.
Matt squatted down beside him.
I have money to pay for the damages we caused this poor cafe owner this night. See that he gets it, will you, amigo?
I'll see he gets it.
You are very good, my Bodine. You are tricky. Like me.
Oh, help me, Doc. Give me something for the pain.
Just hang on a minute or so. You won't have any more pain.
God
Damn you, Bodine. You should have kept your nose out of things that don't concern you. It hadn't been for you and that damn breed brother of yours, things would have worked out. But it ain't over. Not by a long shot. I hope you...
Whatever it was he hoped for died with him. Matt stood up.
Damn it. I never did get to finish my supper.
Sam griped and moaned about having to stay in bed, but it was all for show. He knew better than to try to get up until his ribs began healing properly. A broke-off piece of rib in the lung was not a desirable thing. Tom was all right, but like Sam, he would be abed for a time. Matt brought him up to date on the previous night's shooting and promised to help out around the office, should they need his services. The townspeople were making plans to return to a single-store system now that John and Bull were no longer at war, and merchandise was being moved back and forth across the street. Matt was sitting on the bench outside the marshal's office when Van nudged him with an elbow.
Things are about to get busy around here.
Matt looked. Ross Sutton and Johnny Carlin were riding in, half a dozen mangy-looking no-counts riding in behind them. They reined up in front of the Red Dog and swung down. After being certain that everyone on the street saw them, they went into the saloon.
Now, what do you suppose that's all about?
I don't know. But as far as I know, there ain't no warrants out on any of them. I don't even know any of those hombres with the two boys.
Doc Blaine strolled up.
Trouble coming?
Maybe.
I'd better go get my bag. Tom and Sam spent an uncomfortable night. The first night usually is. They're sleeping now. I'd hate for gunshots to wake them. But I suppose until this craziness is resolved, gunshots are going to be common around here.
Blaine turned and walked back up to his office.
Look there. Singer standing in his doorway.
One of the area's farmers came into town, his wife on the wagon seat beside him, his kids in the bed. They pulled up in front of the general store.
The Kendrick family. Nice people. He keeps the hotel supplied with pork.
Ross Sutton stepped out of the saloon.
You there! Kendrick! I'm talking to you! You keep your damn hogs penned up and off my land! I'll kill the next hog I find on my property!
Kendrick faced the young man, the street separating them.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ross. My hogs don't ever get out of the pen. Are you calling me a liar, you goddamn stinking pig farmer? No, I'm saying that I don't know what you're talking about. You better get a gun.
That's all, Sutton. Back off. Go on in the store, Kendrick.
You go to hell, Dixon. I don't take orders from the likes of you.
The farmer turned, and Ross drew. Kendrick pitched forward and crashed through the plate glass window of the general store. Kendrick's oldest boy ran out of the store just as Johnny Carlin stepped out of the saloon.
Hell, might as well make it a pair.
Johnny pulled iron. He shot the boy through the head.
Son of a bitch. Come on.
Matt and the deputies ran up the street. They all dived for cover as Sutton, Carlin, and their friends turned on them. Women and kids ran for the protection of buildings, and men were scrambling for guns. Johnny Carlin coolly took aim and shot Parley just as he dived for cover. The slug slammed into his leg and broke it just above the knee. Ross Sutton put a .45 slug into Nate Perry's shoulder. Both Sutton and Carlin turned their guns on Matt. Matt rolled behind a water trough. Lawyer Sprague grabbed up his rifle and opened fire from his office window, killing one of those with the rancher's boys. Matt came up on one knee just as the killers jumped on their horses and took off down the alley between Singer's land office and the Red Dog. He leveled his .44 and emptied a saddle before the gang disappeared.
Posse! To your horses, men! Matt, look after things in town!
The deputy was off at a trot as men poured out of stores running for their horses. Doc Blaine was running up the boardwalk, black bag in hand. The undertaker and helper were walking swiftly toward the dead and dying. Doc Blaine stared down at the bloody Parley.
Well, that tears it. There'll be no stopping Bull or John now.
Maybe it's time.
Matt sent a young man on the gallop for Bull and John, and then turned his attention to the safety of the town. He didn't know if the shooting was spur of the moment or whether there had been a more sinister plan behind it. He had to assume the latter and get ready for anything. After quickly consulting with Tom Riley, Matt started organizing the townspeople into a militia, posting men on rooftops and ordering all fire barrels filled in case the outlaws hit the town with the intention of burning it down. Matt just didn't have any idea what might happen next. He certainly had not anticipated the cold-blooded murder of Kendrick and his son. There was no doubt in Matt's mind that as soon as the ranchers heard the news, Bull and John would kill their kids with their own two hands. If the fathers took their sons, they would hang from the nearest tree. Matt had no illusions about that. This was a hard land that demanded swift justice. He had just finished posting the guards and securing the town as best he could against attack and fire when horses approached from the south. He knew without looking up it was Bull and John. The ranchers reined up but did not dismount. Matt could see that the ranchers and riders were supplied for a week on the trail, and all the men packed two pistols and a rifle in a boot.
Kendrick and his boy dead?
Yep.
Our sons killed him without provocation?
Yeah. Neither Kendrick or his son were armed.
You the law in town now?
I guess. Van's out with a posse.
You keep the peace in town, Matt. We'll send the posse back as soon as we catch up with him. This is family business.
Tom stepped out of the door of the clinic with a blanket wrapped around him.
Bull, both you men back off.
Sorry, Tom. This is none of your affair. We sired those kids, and I guess helped make them what they are. So it's up to us to deal with them. You just lay back down and get yourself well.
Bull and John rode slowly over to Singer's office. The man stepped out onto the boardwalk.
You be out of town when we get back, Miles. If you're here, I'll personally kill you and hang those gunnies you've got protected.
You can't do that!
If you're here when we get back, you're gonna find out the hard way what we can and can't do. You've been warned.
Miles Singer looked over at the cowboys. He swallowed hard when he noticed the rope dangling from Laredo's saddle horn. A noose had already been fashioned. Lars carried a hangman's noose on his saddle horn as well. The ranchers and their men rode out without another word.